but we also make a mass-produced version, a little solar-powered fridge aimed at shopkeepers and households in sub-Saharan Africa. So this can be used shopkeepers, farmers, to boost income by refrigerating drinks and perishables like fish, meat, milk, fruit juice. And in many cases, shopkeepers report an increase in sales of other items from their shops as well. So it increases that footfall into the shop.
Okay, hello listeners. My name's Tony Hines. I'm the Communications Director for Power for All. For any new listeners we have today, Power for All is a global advocacy organization, and we are focused on growing the market for distributed renewable energy, and primarily as a means to end energy poverty faster. We're a nonprofit, we're funded by grants and also people like you. So with that out of the way, I'll get down to business. I'm super excited today to have Ian Tansley, co-founder and inventor from SureChill. It's a super exciting organization, and I think you know, it's very hard to know where to start, but I think best start at the beginning. So Ian, if you could tell us a little bit about your journey and the foundation of SureChill.
Sure. Hi, everyone. So I'm Ian Tansley. I'm an engineer by training. I've been working for 35 years in the renewable energy field, mostly in Africa, working with wind power, solar, hydro, biomass, all sorts of things. But for me, it's always been about what you do with the energy rather than generating it just for the sake of generating it. So how you match what's generated to the needs of users and communities. And so about 25 years ago, I decided to specialize in solar and focused my efforts in sub-Saharan Africa, making up systems for water pumping, lighting, and refrigeration. And as with any of the technologies, any of the end uses, it always ended up kind of adapting what was on the market rather than being able to buy something off the shelf. So with the refrigeration systems, it came down to the fact that the battery was always failing and the control systems were pretty poor quality. So it needed a bit of a rethink. And I kind of put my engineer's brain on, my product designer's brain into action, and came up with a different way of doing the refrigeration piece. So the company started in the UK. We were selling all sorts of products. We wanted to get rid of the batteries from the fridge system. World Health Organization were keen to see this happen because they knew that would improve reliability, which they're having big problems with. So I developed and patented the SureChill technology. It was about 10 years ago. It's unique and quite different from any other refrigeration technology. It uses only ice and water to do two very important things very well. The first is it uses ice, and ice is a great energy store. It's very cheap, it's very compact, and it's very clean. But the issue with ice is that it's a bit too cold and it likes to freeze things. And that happens a lot to vaccines, and that's really not very good for them and can damage them and in fact destroy their effectiveness. So you need to do something else. You can use ice for all its properties, but you also need to do something else. And luckily, water has another outstanding property. It's heaviest at 4 degrees centigrade. So if you heat water up, rather like air rising, it rises. But if you cool water down, if you make it into ice, it floats, right? So actually the bit in between is 4 degrees centigrade. That's the heaviest bit. And what we can do with that is we can regulate temperature in a fridge and achieve exactly 4 degrees centigrade all over the fridge, in the fridge itself. So far we've made about 25,000 SureChill fridges in the market in over 70 countries. In the vaccine world, where we've been most successful so far, we've enabled more than 71 million doses of vaccine to be delivered safely. The fridges we make can be solar or mains powered. We see quite a lot of demand for off-grid, but also into the kind of weak grid market. And they've got the ability to stay at stable temperatures for many days or even weeks at a time. So if you cut the power to them, they can maintain temperature. They kind of actively maintain temperature, even though there's no kind of active There's no electricity coming to them. There's no active components because of this water ice relationship.
And four being the magic number, 4 degrees.
Four is the magic number for lots and lots of things, for cold drinks, for vaccines. You know, vaccines need to be between 2 and 8, and 4 is kind of a nice sweet spot there. But I think for the same reason that water's heaviest at 4 degrees centigrade, that's when the molecules are kind of at rest. That's when it's doing kind of least damage to itself. It's not, the molecules aren't bouncing around and bumping into each other, and they're also not arranged in kind of crystalline form where they can't move around. So, and damage things like vaccine or you know, green vegetables and things like that. They don't like to have ice crystals in them, that it destroys the structure of them. So, yeah, so 4 is a perfect number.
Ian, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, obviously with the recent pandemic, you know, vaccine and vaccine distribution has been top of mind, particularly in the global south. Can you tell us a little bit about how SureChill got involved in the vaccine rollout and the impact that that had on your business, and I guess, you know, more importantly, some of the livelihood outcomes that you were enabled?
Yeah, the big case for us, the big hit for us was in India. So India had over 10 million cases of COVID, and to reach all those kind of rural communities, outreach people, you know, you need to have a very effective vaccine cold chain. So each step of the journey, you need vaccines. It's unlike a kind of beverage cooler where you can let the beverage get warm or whatever. You've got to keep the vaccine at those sort of stable temperatures all the way through its journey. So luckily for us, but SureChill vaccine fridges are built in India by Godrej, one of the biggest and most trusted brands in India. And leaning on their expertise in refrigeration manufacturing, we made 12,000 vaccine fridges to fill gaps in the Indian cold chain for the COVID rollout. So those were deployed in hospitals and health centers all over the country. And I understand that by March 22, almost 60% of India's population had been fully vaccinated. So that's really good news.
It's quite astonishing.
Yeah. So the other thing... go on.
No, you can continue, Ian. I was just going to ask something about the technology, but I'm curious to hear more.
Well, I was going to talk about what else we've done. You asked about other kind of sectors where we've been active, and we've developed this mass-produced solar-powered version of the fridge. So we make these fridges for vaccines, and I've talked a bit about that, but we also make a mass-produced version, a little solar-powered fridge aimed at shopkeepers and households in sub-Saharan Africa. So this can be used, shopkeepers, farmers, to boost income by refrigerating drinks and perishables like fish, meat, milk, fruit juice. And in many cases, shopkeepers report an increase in sales of other items from their shops as well. So it increases that footfall into the shop. And the fridge can be used in pharmacies, medical practices. You don't have to stick to the same rigorous standards imposed by WHO, World Health Organization. So it's quite small for agriculture, but we plan to build larger units. We're building larger units for beverage cooling and extending the range to include mains power devices. So that's a solar power device, and for weak mains, weak grid areas, or actually even areas where you want to control where you're using it when you're using electricity. So mini grids and stuff like that it would be useful.
So what are the fundamental differences between a DC and an AC fridge? Is one more suitable for certain applications, or is there a big technology kind of disjoint between them? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, the DC fridge is a solar direct drive fridge, so it runs directly off solar panels. So you just literally plug the back of the fridge into the output from a solar panel, and the fridge looks after itself because it takes power when the electricity is coming from the solar panel. It makes ice with that energy and stores that ice in the fridge. And that's released to do the cooling via the water that's naturally circulating around. So in that way, there's a kind of intermittent energy supply from the solar panel that's being built up inside the fridge and used to refrigerate for the rest of the day and night. And the same thing happens with the mains-powered fridge. It's just a mains-powered compressor inside the fridge. So the motor inside the fridge is a mains-powered motor, But it essentially it does the same thing. When you've got electricity, that feeds into the system, builds ice, and that ice is then used to do the refrigeration for the rest of the day or even a couple of days.
Right. So those AC fridges require an intermittent supply, or they could be used in a mini grid environment that's got inverters already.
Exactly. So if you've got an intermittent supply to your household, so you've got maybe 5 or 6 hours of electricity coming in, or your shop, then you can just plug this into the wall, and when the electricity comes, it'll suck the energy and put it into the fridge. So in that sense, you haven't got a choice when that energy is coming. In a mini grid, the mini grid provider might say, well, I want everybody to use electricity for refrigeration in the middle of the day when I've got my solar panels are all making most of electricity. I don't want to be running a generator at nighttime to run all these fridges for the whole kind of community. So we can use that kind of peak time electricity, that excess of supply, if you like, and soak that up. To provide, it's essentially a kind of battery. I don't like using the word battery for the ice, but essentially that's what it is. The ice is soaking up the energy from the system and able to kind of spread it out and use it for the rest of the day.
And the question I was going to ask earlier was about transportation. So you mentioned that you had SureChill products in health centers and in residential and small commercial. Within the value chain, is it an application, or is there an application for transportation of perishables and vaccines?
There definitely is. We haven't seen that much yet because we haven't really developed that much ourselves. We've been focused on getting these refrigerators out into the market. But there's definitely a need for that temperature controlled logistics in all sorts of forms. And I've actually developed a few different ways of using that. So from a kind of cardboard box where you can, keep the temperature over a day or two, so send it through the mail or something, to a pallet, a full-size pallet that you can put inside an aircraft and ship that across, to deliver things like pharmaceuticals. So anything that's very temperature sensitive. The nice thing about the technology, of course, is that it's essentially very cheap because it's just ice and water. So you've got both this energy store and this temperature regulation just within that body of water. It's the clever bit is how you arrange those two elements to give you this temperature control. But once you've got that, then there's all sorts of tricks that you can do. And what we're doing, conventionally with ice is the ice kind of melts. So you get essentially you start off at one temperature and you gradually rise to another temperature and eventually it goes out of range. What the SureChill technology does is it starts off at this perfect 4 degree temperature and it stays at 4 degrees. So it's a flat line performance all the way to the end of when the ice is completely melted. And only then does it come out of temperature. So you get a much, much better performance. And for some things, pharmaceuticals, things like milk are really sensitive to sort of variations in temperature. They don't like to kind of go too high and come back down again. So there's this concept called mean kinetic temperature, which you don't want to keep exposing your product necessarily to excursions, high and low excursions.
Mm-hmm. And then as a closed system, I'm imagining that it's somewhat fault tolerant, particularly compared to traditional compressor based.
Well, the thing about it is it because water's heaviest at 4 degrees centigrade. This is a sort of fundamental law of nature. It doesn't want to do anything else. You can put hot things inside one of our devices and it will cool it down to 4 degrees to hold it at 4 degrees. You can put colder things inside our devices and it will warm them up to 4 degrees and hold them at 4 degrees centigrade. So it's a naturally kind of a naturally regulating and defensive mechanism.
I'd love to spend a few moments talking about some of the challenges that you've encountered as you've stood the business up and rolled the technology out. I mean, you mentioned cost earlier, and something that we see at Power for All as we're looking at the productive use of energy, particularly in smaller communities, and we're also looking a lot in the agricultural sector at the moment with solar pumps. the upfront capex cost can be prohibitive. And you know, is that something that you've encountered with SureChill, and what are some of the mechanisms that you've deployed to overcome that?
Yeah, so it is a problem, and you've rightly identified it. So the fridges are, although they're kind of mass produced in the sense of, you know, there are thousands and thousands of them being built, they're still not manufactured even on the scale of a fully mass produced product. So it's still, you know, in refrigeration industry terms, it's a relative niche market, even though there's thousands and thousands being made. So, you know, even if they were, you know, they would still be an expensive thing to buy for someone in a rural area or on a lower income. So we have a couple of mechanisms that we use and that are well tried and tested in the field. So the pay-as-you-go market, we have a keypad that we can fit to the devices that can enable pay-as-you-go system to pay for the fridge, and after a period of time, 12 months, 18 months, whatever, the fridge then becomes the property of the user. And the other one is cooling as a service. Sometimes people prefer not to own the fridge. They would rather that we looked after it. We would service it. We would keep it up to date. And so they just pay for the service of having the cold at their place.
Oh, that's super intriguing. So there's effectively a lease to buy that is enabled by technology.
Yeah.
And then cooling as a service. So my assumption would be that the lease to buy option is probably more for residential or very small commercial, and cooling as a service is something that's maybe more focused on a distribution organization.
That's right. I think we've seen, it's early days yet, but what we've seen so far is that the pay-as-you-go is very popular with kind of individual shopkeepers who've got, or farmers who've got produce that they want to sell. So somebody making fruit juice, you know, they're making it on the roadside or whatever, they want to be able to sell it. You know, they can add a lot of value by bringing refrigeration into it. So those kind of people, you know, they're seeing an uplift in their revenues, and so they can easily pay for the pay-as-you-go monthly or weekly charge out of the increased revenue they get from what they're selling. So in that way, they can cover the cost of that and continue. You're right. You know, this cooling as a service is something probably more suited to larger organisations. So someone with a whole kind of estate of shopkeepers that they want to support, so they're going to pay on a weekly basis, monthly basis to have product that's running, you know, and we take on more, in a sense, more responsibility there because we deliver it, we look after it, but it's cheaper on a weekly or monthly basis for those people to have that cooling as a service, and anytime they feel like they don't want it anymore, then we can take it away. It's not a problem, so there's no kind of commitment to keeping it for a long period of time.
Right. Interesting. So you've got maintenance effectively, you know, kind of wrapped up in the cooling as a service offering as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've got the after sales maintenance on the units that are going pay as you go as well. But essentially, yeah. And what's the other thing that it gives us the opportunity to do, of course, is to reuse and recycle those fridges that have been out for cooling as a service. So that's one that we can upgrade them, we can repair them, we can put them back into service again. So on a sort of circular economy kind of model, we can do much better by having control over the fridges ourselves. They come back to us, they can be repaired, they can be put back into operation, and they can have a much longer and more productive lifetime.
Awesome. Okay, so changing gears a little bit, what is next for SureChill? What's you know, you mentioned a little bit about you know, some of the, you know, product and technical design and moving into adjacent markets, but what's the big focus for the next 12 months?
The big thing for us is about getting bigger fridges into the fridge that we make at the moment is a relatively small unit. It's an under the counter unit. It's great for small shopkeepers. It's great for small farmers, whatever. But scaling up, getting bigger products into the beverage cooler kind of sector, looking at those bigger devices like that, doing more of the mains powered stuff, because what we're realizing is that, yes, there's a demand from off-grid, and it's a strong demand, and there's very little opportunity to do anything else. But there's actually a lot of demand in the weak grid sector as well. So that's a market that we can really bring a lot of value to. So that's also going to be a big deal for us. Lots of other things besides the technology itself. We've talked a lot about fridges, and we focus on the kind of manifestation of the technology in a fridge. My role is actually to look at the next big thing 5 years down the line. So I've got all sorts of things cooking, which I can't even talk about, which are really exciting things to do with cooling that are coming down the line that are going to be, they're going to feed into this whole kind of offering, sub-Saharan Africa cooling kind of offering. It's what we're doing.
Well, I mean, it's been tremendous to witness your journey so far, and truly a great, great, outstanding case of productive use of energy in sub-Saharan Africa and India, and the Global South surely needs this sort of innovation. So, one last question for you, Ian. If I were to hand you a magic wand that granted one wish for your organization, what would that be?
I think the ability to be able to scale up quickly. I think that's where we, because scaling one, you get more impact more quickly, which is what we're all about, as that's kind of our raison d'etre. So that's really the thing. The other thing it does is it drives volumes, and the volumes are the things that bring the price down. So it makes it more affordable, which means even more people can afford it. So being able to sort of jump to a bigger scale more quickly is really important, fundamentally important to the development of the technology and of the market. So if you could grant me one thing, that would be it.
Well, I think perhaps a bit of patience. It seems like you're very much on the right track to doing that. And I do hope that the tipping point comes quickly, because a lot of the research that we're doing at Power for All, particularly in the agricultural sector, the demand, I think, is intense.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Tony.
So it's a nice problem to have, perhaps, Ian.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, no, it's proving very, very popular, and the demand is high. But, if we're going to do it, we have to do it properly. We have to support it properly. That means building infrastructure. It means training people or call centers, engineers, all that stuff. So building that infrastructure does take time. So if we could jump forward,
well, indeed. I mean, across some of the most populous regions and growing populations on the planet too. So not for the faint hearted.
Not for the faint hearted. Well, but we love it.
Indeed. There you go. Well, listen, it's been such a pleasure, Ian. And really, truly, lots of admiration for Shorchill. I think it's it's a fantastic story, and one that we would love to cover in the future.
Especially.
So thank you very much for your time and sharing your story with our listeners. And we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks a lot.
Thank you all for listening. A reminder that you can find a wealth of sector news, analysis and data on our website, powerforall.org, and our platform for energy access knowledge, Peak. You can also sign up to receive our monthly newsletter, and if you'd like to support our work, you can make a donation via our homepage. I hope to speak to you all soon on the next episode of Power for All podcast.